Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Road to Revolution podcast, my journey with Linkin Park. And first things first, happy Memorial Day, everybody. Let you in on a little secret. I record these a bit in advance. So today when I'm recording it, it is not Memorial Day. But I am wishing you a happy Memorial Day because that is when this episode will come out. So if the world has gotten crazier or better or anything between now and then, I won't know. Because I don't know the future. But for right now, I will say happy Memorial Day, because this episode is on May 25th. So just to pull the curtain back a little bit there. But yeah, just wanted to wish everybody happy Memorial Day. Hope you're doing as best as you can, given the circumstances of the world right now. But yeah, and I thank you for joining me for this podcast because I love doing it, and I love that there are at least some people listening to it. You know, warms my heart that their little project I've picked back up during the quarantine downtime, coronavirus world, whatever you want to call it. I'm happy that anyone at all has listened, so I deeply appreciate that. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about a very special show, not because of an experience I had at the show, just because it's a big moment in Linkin Park history, for two reasons, kind of. The main reason is this was Linkin Park's first ever show at the world's most famous arena, Madison Square Garden. Now, if you're not from New York or you don't know anything about this venue, Madison Square Garden is one of the most famous venues in the world, hence the name. It is the home of the New York Rangers, the New York Knicks, countless legendary events, the first WrestleMania and three other WrestleManias, I believe. So many great events have happened at this venue. If you're a wrestling fan, as you might have guessed I am by mentioning WrestleMania, it's possible we may not have The Rock. So even if you're not a wrestling fan, if you like movies and you like certain things like that, we may not have The Rock had it not been for Madison Square Garden, because that is where he debuted in 1996. So that's a cool little tidbit there. But yeah, this was Linkin Park's first show at Madison Square Garden. It was on the Minutes to Midnight North American Tour in February of 2008. And this one was on February 21st, which is interesting because I believe this to be the first time I'd seen Linkin Park twice on the same date. Previously, I'd seen them on February 21st, 2001 at the Roseland Ballroom in New York City, which sadly is now gone. So seeing them here on February 21st, 2008 at the Garden was really, really cool. I'm trying to think if there's any other bands that I've seen on the same date in different years. The only one that comes to mind, and just because I was talking about this one the other day with somebody, was Blink-182. I saw them on May 4th, 2001, also at the Roseland Ballroom in New York, which, side note, was an amazing show. It was like 15 or 20 bucks. In 2001, so that was a big time for Blink. That was Blink when they were just about to put out Take Off Your Pants and Jacket. This was the Honda Civic Tour during the spring, early summer of that year with the Alkaline Trio and Sum 41. Sum 41 had not even put out their big first album yet, or their second album. I always forget if the EP before is considered an album or not. But this was a big show, and it wasn't super expensive, and to see the three of them in such a small, cool venue was amazing. That was also the show that I first crowd surfed at, which is really, really cool. I'll never forget that. I crowd surfed during Damn It, and I remember going up there, and Tom DeLong pointed at me while I was crowd surfing, and that, to me, was like the coolest moment of my life at that point. I was like, this is amazing. Like, Tom from Blink-182 looked at me, recognized my existence, and pointed at me while I crowd surfed, and then was pulled out of the crowd by security. And then I went back into the crowd and enjoyed the rest of the song, because that was the last song. They Blink, like how Linkin Park would always close with One Step Closer forever, Blink would almost always close with Damn It. It was just their perennial closer. And then the other Blink show was on May 4th, 2017. So a much bigger gap than this Linkin Park gap here of 7 years. But anyway, enough Blink 182 talk, which I can also talk about all day. I love Blink. I would be confident in saying they are my number two behind Linkin Park. They're such a constant throughout my life of once I got into music and rock and playing guitar and all that kind of music, Blink were such a big constant. I remember getting Dude Ranch from Columbia House and putting on Damn It and just be like, man, this riff is so cool. And then I listened to the whole album and I was in love. It's been like that ever since. So until Linkin Park resurfaces or comes back and does something, I guess in terms of active bands, Blink is my favorite band right now, with the Alkaline Trio being right behind them. I'm a big Matt Skiba fan. But that's neither here nor there right now. So back to the Linkin Park at Madison Square Garden. No surprise here. I went to the show with Sal. You will see a big trend with that. Very few shows for the rest of this podcast series will not be with Sal. Any shows post 2012 will not be with Sal. But I think until then, I don't think I went to any without him. Which is great, but I miss going to shows with him. Those were a lot of fun. There was a big adventure. But I went to this one with Sal, and the tour was with Coheed and Cambria as direct support, and Chiodos were the openers. And if you don't know anything about Chiodos, but the name sounds familiar, and you are a horror movie fan, there's a reason why. They were originally named the Chiodos Brothers, named after the people who created Killer Clowns from Outer Space. They eventually changed their name to Chiodos, and that's how the band came to be. So as I mentioned, this was the first time the band ever played Madison Square Garden, and it was a February show. Now, I'm no stranger to Linkin Park in February. Like I mentioned, I'd seen them in 2001 at Roseland. And then I'd also seen them in January in 2004 at Nassau Coliseum. So I've seen them in the cold. This was my first one where I was out waiting for hours in the cold. All my other waiting for Linkin Park shows was in the summer, which, you know, we complained about the heat waiting for those shows and how much we sweat. And then we craved it so much at this show. And there were other very cold Linkin Park waiting experiences, but this one was rough. It was so freezing outside, and we were among the first people in the line as well. I remember it was me, Sal, a couple other people. I'm not gonna lie, the Linkin Park show here and the Linkin Park show at Madison Square Garden in 2011 kind of bleed together a bit for me in terms of the waiting, just because they're both in February, they're both very cold. So I don't remember which was which, but nothing really eventful happened during the waiting aside from it being very, very cold. So luckily there's not a big story missing there. Now, once the doors had opened, we were ready just to get inside, get warm, get on the railing. We were craving being surrounded by all these thousands of people because we all would have been warm. And I'm sure that would go away by the time the show started because we would just be sweaty again. But it was fine in the meantime because we got inside and we saw that there were already people inside. I don't know if it was through the LPU early entry or I can't remember if this is when they had started selling VIP tickets. Because that wasn't always a thing. Nowadays, every show has a VIP ticket that gets you merchandise, a VIP ticket that gets you a meet and greet, a VIP ticket that gets you early entry or backstage or a suite or all this stuff. And that wasn't a thing at this point. Thankfully too. I feel like I wouldn't have gone to as many shows because we always wanted to get as close or as best seats as possible. And if VIP was a thing, you know, during all the Linkin Park shows I ever went to, it would be a lot harder to pull that off. But luckily it was not. I can't remember what it was at this show, but there were already people inside and we were so cold and we were kind of bitter at this point. We're like, man, what the hell? There's already people in here. Luckily, Madison Square Garden's huge and not everybody who had early entry was on the floor. So, you know, we still got a prime spot, like almost dead center on the railing, which was great. You know, that's where we always want to be. We want to be as close to the center as possible. We like to be somewhat near where Chester's going to be, just because he was always the most interactive with us during the shows. So we always tried to get the same spot. So there was a, I always struggle with this word, a familiarity. We were in our familiar spot. There we go. We'll try that. I cannot say the other word for the life of me. Never could. So we're always in a familiar spot, and it worked. You know, we always had good interactions because of that. And this show was no different, which I'll talk about shortly. So the set list was, again, fairly similar to the Product Revolution tour from the previous summer. But being in New York and being Madison Square Garden and in New York City, big show, this show had a special event, which was you know, a nice little surprise. We had heard rumblings of this happening. But lo and behold, during the outro, none other than Sean Carter himself, Jay-Z, shows up once again, marking the second time I got to see Linkin Park and Jay-Z perform together. This time they did two songs. They did Numb Encore and Gigawatt Faint, which was really cool. But there's a part of me, again, you know, it's always going to be like this at the shows from here through the end of the Linkin Park show stories I have, because every time they played Faint, there was part of me like, maybe they'll bring me up again. Maybe they'll do it. And I never saw them bring someone up again for Faint, at least a fan. So, you know, they when Jay-Z was up there and I knew they hadn't played Faint yet and they started playing Gigawatt Faint, I was like, all right, so they're not going to bring me up, which, again, silly thing. Like, it already happened. Best moment of my life. I need to stop, you know, wanting it to happen again, which is also silly because it was amazing. I would love for it to happen again. But seeing them do these songs again was cool, because last time I'd seen them do them was in 2004. Last time they had played them to get played them live was in 2005 at Live Aid in Philadelphia, which I wanted to go to. In hindsight, I'm kind of happy I didn't go to, because it was a free show and it was just this huge, huge thing. I think thousands, you know, I know a million people plus around the world went to these Live Aid shows, or Live 8 as they were called. And I wanted to go, but I was on vacation with my family at the time and just couldn't swing it. So in hindsight, not bummed about it. You know, looking at how many people were there and how much I loved being as close as possible, I don't know if I could have handled being far back, especially seeing how big the crowds were for those shows. So plus, I got to see Linkin Park and Jay-Z twice. Like, you know, most people never even got to see that once. So I count myself very, very lucky, especially because the first time I saw them was aside from the Roxy show that they recorded the Collision Course DVD at, I saw one of the first public, like, wide viewings of that was the Holmdel show in 2004. Nobody knew that was going to happen, and the only people that knew the Roxy show would happen, the people who were there. So seeing that show there was kind of a big surprise, and then the surprise at the Garden was just as cool. Shorter, you know, obviously they only did two songs, but still very, very cool. There's an interesting note about this show, that I never thought about till right now. Actually, I was trying to remember elements from this show, and I remember being on the railing, at this show, and it was me and Sal, and we were talking to the security guys and the photographers and stuff, between bands. 'Cause, you know, some of them we knew from other shows, like Bagel, who I'd mentioned previously. We see him at all the shows, the Linkin Park shows we went to, and sure enough, he was there, and we were talking to him, and he was like, hey, I'm not sure how true it is, but I just heard that Paramore broke up. And we're like, what? No way. And at that point, I hadn't seen Paramore. I'd just gotten into them a couple of months prior. And I was like, man, I want to see them. I think they were already announced for Bamboozle 2008, and I had tickets. So I was like, all right, I'm going to see them. And then they had said, you know, he was telling us that they were having some trouble, and I think they were touring overseas and that they broke up overseas. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, no, like, I love that album. Like, I listened to Riot back to front. I listened to All We Know Is Falling. And I was like, you were kidding. Like, this is terrible. Now, lo and behold, that didn't end up being totally true. I do believe there was some issues that happened on their tour overseas. And obviously things eventually came to a head years later when the Pharaohs left the band. But Paramore played again. We saw them at Bamboozle a couple months after this. And then Brand New Eyes came out a year and a half or so later. So obviously they didn't break up at that point. They're not even officially broken up now in 2020. I believe they're on a big hiatus. But Haley's doing her own stuff right now. But that worry that, when Bagel says, I heard they broke up, I was just so bummed and I'm about to see my favorite band, but Paramore were one of my current favorites at the time. So I was like, just so conflicted. I was like, I'm about to see Linkin Park and I'm super stoked. But at the same time, man, this is a bummer. Obviously that didn't end up happening the way he had said. So luckily that wasn't true to a degree. But back to the Linkin Park set list. I mentioned the Jay-Z stuff, which was really cool. But there was another cool little bit that happened at the show. They did crawling as they always do. And Chester came down into the crowd. And he, at many shows, he would come down and he would be on like the rail. And I don't know if you've ever been front row at a concert where there's the railings, like in a general admission area. But there's like, on the opposite side, it's like a big barricade and there's like little steps. So like security can step up and help pull people out of the crowd if they're crowd surfing or if they're hurt or injured or whatever. But it's also a way for the bands to like stand and be near the crowd and sing and right on front of / on top of the crowd. So during crawling, Chester had come down and he was going through the whole crowd and he was all along the front and he was singing with people and he got to me and Sal and he was with us for a bit and he let us sing with him on crawling for a short while, which was amazing. So as I mentioned in the previous episode, Sal and I got to rap a little bit on Paper Cut, which was awesome at the Holmdel 2007 show. Sal had gotten to sing with them, I want to say in 2003 at some point. And then I got to play with them in 2004. So we had our cool moments and then here we are. We're getting to sing a little bit of crawling again, which is great. And a couple of days later, I get tagged in a video on Facebook by a friend John that I went to high school with, and it was a video from the show. And what you see is the screen because they were a little further back in the upper deck seats at the Garden, and it's a video of the screen. Well, it's a video of the stage first, and it's them playing crawling. You can hear crawling, and then you hear John in the video go, "Oh my God, it's Billy." And the camera pans over and it looks at the screen and you can see me and Sal with Chester singing. He tagged me and was like, "Hey, I thought you might want to see this video from the other night," which I always thought was really cool. Because I had not seen or talked to John a whole lot after that. And this was almost 4 years after I graduated high school. So getting to, reconnect a little bit after that was kind of cool, especially because, if I went to a concert and looked up at the screen, there was a dude I went to high school with, I'd be like, "Hey, that's pretty cool." So I loved that little story. And plus it was a nice, another little experience of, I don't want to say performing with the band because that overstates it by a lot, but, getting to be a tiny, tiny part of the show or just getting that experience with Chester again, which is a nice little thing, especially obviously, what had happened later on. It's nice to relive those memories and remember all the cool little times we got to experience with him. But that's going to do it for our little Madison Square Garden episode. Next week, we're going to be talking about our return to the Project Revolution Tour 2008. This one's going to be in Camden, New Jersey. It's a bit different than the previous Project Revolution Tour. I feel like the Project Revolution 2007 tour was this monster with Linkin Park and My Chemical Romance and Taking Back Sunday. And then you get to Project Revolution 2008, which was great. I genuinely love this tour, but it was very different. It was Linkin Park and Chris Cornell, which is very bittersweet now looking back. Busta Rhymes was on that tour as well. So it was interesting. It was a very interesting tour. But we're going to talk about that a bit more in depth. Next one is going to be another double episode because it's Project Revolution 2008 in Camden, New Jersey, and a few days later in Jones Beach again. So we'll do another double one for next week. But until then, this has been My Road to Revolution. My name is Billy, and I thank you so much for joining me.